Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, and Ailish Forfar. We're having a fun little baby Friday today. Vibes are high. And I assume they will continue with our next guest, our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Michael Grange, Sportsnet NBA columnist and insider. Good morning.
Good morning, Ailish. What a lovely introduction. Thank you.
Oh, we're having a lovely day, and we're just so excited to talk about this crazy week ahead. 1 week from the trade deadline today. Blake has been posing fake trades to us, and I assume that we're going to get into that. Or maybe some. Well, you have a fake trade column coming up this week, about trades. We're just into the trade season this morning.
Yes. Well, that's fine. Blake, I'm aware of this trade column. I participated in it.
Yes.
Will Lou and I had some words about it yesterday. We're a little anxious. Because in Blake's email, he said, you know, and I'll you give me your fake trades, and I'll poke fun at them in a nice way, he said. And I'm like,
I already told Blake if he actually skewers my fake trade or takes a shot at me in any way, I'm gonna
he's off the
like,
show.
We're gonna have words, and I'm gonna make it a real personal, real mean thing, very just awful. Listen, you don't want to get in the mud with me, Grange. You know that, right? Like you don't want to get in the mud with me because I'm born in the mud. I'm from the mud. My mother was a mudder, kind of like you don't want to be in the mud with me. So you cannot possibly have pitched a worse trade than I did in terms of timing, though. Well, mine involves trading both OG and Gary Trent Jr., who are now the two most popular players on the planet. I traded both of them. So whatever you have, it's not going to be as bad as mine.
Who?
Yeah, no. It's, I wanted to kind of bring you in on this thinking of the trade, but I'm going to start with this. Do you think that there's actually pressure on Masai Ujiri and co. to do something this deadline all of a sudden? Because there is a growing case with the Eastern Conference being as weak as it is, with the Raptors' core players playing as well as they are, that this team should maybe be willing to push in good assets. I know you've been saying for a while that they should be willing to part with those pieces, like a first-round pick this year or a down-the-lineup, obviously. But do you think that there's now actually pressure on them to do so? They don't move those pieces, and everyone's going, what happened here? Why didn't you do that?
I would say urgency. I mean, these guys don't have pressure on them. All they do is point at their wing or point at the banner and say, leave me alone. So there's no pressure. I do think that there's urgency, and that's I've kind of felt that for a while now. And really, to me, it you know, I think when they opened the season, they wanted to see what would happen with their core pieces, however they defined. Were they competitive? Could they pop? And we had to wait so long for that to happen. And then all of a sudden it started happening. And it started with Fred and then Pascal and obviously now Gary and OG's rounding into form. And, you know, but when you have Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam playing at the level they have more or less now for, well, in Fred's case, all season, but in Pascal since December 1, let's say, and they are going to be 28 years old, you know, you're not really rebuilding anymore, right? Like these are all-star or all-star potential players in the primes playing at their peaks. You know, so I think at that point you have to look, okay, well, what can we do? Where are we weak? What can we realistically add to support this group? And then that very quickly, as you go through these trade exercises, the problem with this team is that after you get past the first five or six players, there's no one to trade. You know, Goran Dragic's contract aside. And so that's when you get into these futures and, you know, and I think that shapes your decision-making. But yeah, pressure, no. Urgency, yes.
I agree, Michael, that the asset chest is a little bare, right? And they own all their first-round picks moving forward, which is great, and those are helpful. They're out a second this year and a second in 2024 from salary dump moves during the championship year. But you're looking, and you've got draft picks to attach to Dragic, who, again, makes $19.44 million. That allows you to take back 25% more than that. But realistically, the Raptors are going to want a cash-neutral deal to stay below the tax. And then, yeah, the sweeteners that you would throw in, some contending teams might have a spot for Chris Boucher in their second unit, but he's also 29 and about to be a free agent. So I don't think if you're going to the sellers, he doesn't move the needle a lot. And who knows if Malachi Flynn has value beyond, you know, hey, we'll take him and we'll kick the tires on him and maybe throw you a second. But I don't think he's changing a deal fundamentally. So the framework that, and again, this column will go through a few of them and a few different targets, but most of the frameworks center on Dragic, a pick, and then maybe one other piece if you need it for salary matching or whatever. So that's that's pretty limiting. What's not limiting, though, is that you have a lot of weaknesses you could potentially fill, right? You need help in the backcourt. You need a center. You need shooting. There are a lot of different ways you could go. Do you get the sense from around the team, Grange, that they're targeting any one specific thing? Like, is it extra shooting? Is it a point guard to help Fred? Is it a center? Or they could just kind of see, hey, what's the best thing we can get for this limited package we have? And we'll, you know, we'll take whatever the best return is, regardless of position or, you know, near term fit.
Yeah, I think they're open. I would probably categorize it. I think their ideal would be a kind of a playmaking one and a half, or a playmaking, you know, somebody who can create plays and shoot. Right. So if you're only going to get one piece, that would be the one that would kind of help you in multiple areas. But I think, in a broader picture, they're probably approaching it a little bit like they would a draft, right? So they're going to take the best talent available. I think the priority they do have is they want something with a little bit of control. So if they're going to give up a future asset in terms of a draft pick or picks, you know, they don't. It's certainly not going to be a rental. It'll be somebody who's at minimum an RFA, but unlikely in that case because the salaries are probably won't match. It's almost certainly going to be somebody with 1 or 2 or 3 years. And I think that's how you also are interesting to other teams, right? Because the teams you're likely dealing with who are interested in expiring contracts and future picks are, you know, teams that are probably looking to get off, you know, some kind of commitment, you know, in the future. They're at a different stage relatively to the Raptors. So I think that's the one priority. And it'll be interesting to see if they try and fix more than one of their weaknesses. In other words, try and get two players back or some kind of combination. Or if they just kind of go all in and try and get that one player that can move the needle. And it'll be interesting, too, because I think, you know, if we were to have this conversation 2-3 weeks ago, you know, you'd be fine maybe if you threw Chris Boucher into a deal. All of a sudden you're kind of going, well, yeah, you would like to keep those bird rights. Like what he does and what he's doing is valuable. Like, he is part of a winning formula, I think, the way he's been playing the last few weeks. And even Precious Achiuwa, who is, like, probably the most compounding player I can remember in a long time, every once in a while and a little bit more recently, he's showing flashes of, you know, he can play. He can be a little bit more consistent. He's finding a way to affect games. And so, not to say they wouldn't use him in a deal, but you know, I don't know if they're in a rush to. So I think it'll be interesting to me if they try and just kind of spread things out and try and really fix their depth problems in more than one area, or if they just go all in on one area and whatever the best they can get in that one area they go for.
So you guys are correct, right? The assets that the Raptors are using are going to in this deadline are the ones that you guys outlined. I'm not expecting anything that's, you know, franchise changing, nor do I really think that that's the type of deal that you do at a deadline unless a once in a lifetime opportunity presents itself. But as we were putting this thing together and as we were doing this exercise, like, Grange, my fake trade involved Bradley Beal. And the only reason I did it was because I thought, you know what, I'm just going to do a splashy one because it's really hard to find good trades. So part of me is going to say, hey, I guess you writers and your words, your thesauruses, knowing that it's not pressure, it's, what did you guys say? It's urgency. Urgency, is it fine? You're correct. But yeah, when you look around the landscape, it's tough to find a trade, right? It's tough to find a trade partner, especially considering that it is likely going to be a buyer's market, right? There are teams with real pressure. What do you do if you're Utah all of a sudden and you just lost a key player in Ingles and you're trying to win a championship this year? You can go on down the line and find five teams with more pressure or more urgency, Philadelphia being one of them too. But the Raptors, I thought about this as I was doing the Beal trade, and the reason why I wouldn't hate it if the team ended up trading an OG and an OB is the way that Siakam and Fred are playing right now. I do wonder if it changes the window a little bit here. Both of those guys are going to turn, what, 28 in the next 2 months? I think that's the case with both of them. And they're both playing what I would consider to be the best basketball they're ever going to play. And no, do I think that the Raptors are going to win a title this year? Probably not. But I'm looking at the Eastern Conference, and tonight they're playing a Bulls team that's a one seed. I think the Raptors could beat the Bulls. I honestly think the Raptors could beat the Miami Heat in a seven-game series if they had some more pieces around the fringes. Like, do you really start to look at Siakam and Fred a little differently, considering the landscape of the NBA, and say, you know what, maybe we actually do have to be aggressive with a piece in the near future, like an OG and an OB, to try to build potentially a contender with these two?
I mean, it's not the craziest fake trade. you know what I mean? I think it does get to that heart of that question, is to how much they believe in what they have. And, you know, we've seen the formula before, where you kind of accumulate, you know, really good players and trying to turn them into an excellent player. And, you know, that's sad. I mean, I don't see Bradley Beal and Kawhi Leonard in the same category, but he is obviously a pretty impressive player. But I guess I would put it back at you, and I'm just not sure that this group is ready for that yet. And, you know, the reason, you know, I think the challenge you run into if you go down that road, Blake, is you just, you still don't have any depth. And, you know, and you're turning two really good players who have a ton of upside still into, you know, a better single player. But then you've kind of reduced you've shortened your lineup again. And I just think that I just don't know if I see it from their point of view that it's time to go all in that scenario. I think maybe you want to support this group that you have, get them a little deeper, see if they can make some noise, assess again as the season goes on. And then maybe in the off season, when you do have a little bit full of war chest, maybe you can think about participating in some deals.
Grange, so you did send me a couple fake trades that'll be in that column up at .ca today. And, you know, I wasn't too mean to JD, but I said the same thing, right? You're eroding what's already a thin team to get even top heavier and even thinner. And then also getting older, which isn't bad if you're getting maybe a superstar level player, you're opening a championship window, but I don't know what's that. And that's before, you know, JD had a caveat in his trade suggestion of, like, under the assumption that Beal wants to stick around. You sent me three.
I also gave us Bertans, okay? So I didn't just
shorten
the team.
You gave us what you called the worst contracted basketball.
Yeah.
I'm not anti-Bertans, actually. Like, I'm not so angry about getting Davis Bertans. But anyway, go ahead.
Look, asset-wise, he's a bug, not a feature. He's got three more years at 16.5 per. He's not a bad player, but bad contract. So, Grange, you sent me three different deals for this piece, and you laid out, hey, there are two different ways you could do this. You could try to get one guy that really moves the needle, or you could try to get two pieces that address multiple things and really improve your depth, even if the 1A piece in a deal isn't as high. In the three suggestions you sent me, you lean toward the two-piece option every single time. Each deal you sent me brought back two rotation caliber players. I'm wondering, after going through that exercise, do you have a favorite target or a favorite trade scenario that you sent me?
Of those three, if I could, if I could magically snap my fingers, I think trying to get something going with the Spurs and bring back Doug McDermott and Jakob Poeltl. I think, I think that gives you, instantly improves all your weaknesses around your bigs. Poeltl fits right in because he was here before. and McDermott is, he's 30 years old. He's arguably, he's in the top five in terms of consistency of three-point shooters in the league. He's done really well off the bench. He's done, he shot it really well as a starter in San Antonio. Defensively, he is what he is, but he's not a small wing player. And so I think if you could entice San Antonio into something like that, I think right away, ignoring if it's possible or not, if you just patch those two players onto this team, you're a lot better, like instantly. So that would be my wish. I it's probably the least likely of the three.
So I would love to see that, right? Who wouldn't want to see the Raptors with an actual big man who can play in the pick and roll, who already knows the team, who can rebound, who just fits in every single way? And McDermott, the shooting and being able to have that offense would be great as well. Another spot-up shooter, considering what this team has. Great. Love that idea. But what you just outlined to me is, okay, you got some of your business done this year. You added depth to this team, which you and Blake both outlined as to why you're not doing my trade, and this is the priority first, right? But I actually think that that's the kind of trade that only further exemplifies why something along the lines of the thinking of what I outlined becomes just a question of the offseason. Is what are you doing with your team here? Because if you add Jakob Poeltl and Doug McDermott, you're more so a playoff team, but it doesn't really change the way I view you as a contender. And Grange, I've been kind of saying and thinking this privately for some time, and I keep sort of floating it by Blake and I'm floating it by other people, but this year the Raptors came into the season with, well, what's the direction of the franchise? What are they exactly? What are we trying to find out here? And when we say they're not ready, I agree that there's not the urgency or the need to trade one guy this offseason to try to go all in or screw with your depth or go out and get a superstar player. But going into next year, if I feel like there's one thing I learned, is that I actually think that the timeline is not resetting this to Barnes and OG. That it's, hey, Siakam and Fred are really, really good, and Barnes might develop into something special really, really quickly. And OG sort of feels actually like the big trade piece that you can use to go out and get someone bigger to fit around those guys. Like, I actually think that the organization might have to make a decision of what are we deciding to do here? Are we building around these two guys and trying to win in their age 28, 29 seasons next year? Or are we resetting the timeline a little bit and saying there isn't that urgency to win? But I don't think that the Raptors can just choose, we're in the middle, we're a play-in team, and we're all just trying to develop these guys on the fly and hope it ends up working out, and we have a title contender in 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that premise. Because, and I guess my answer back would be, I just don't, you know, you kind of tumble it around a lot, and I keep coming back to, you know, I don't see a direct or a very clear path to this team becoming what you would call a defender, contender. And so, you know, I think really to me, it's more, can you accumulate good players? Can you get your team better? And kind of, yeah, I think you need to be a little more gradual about it. I think that's where I would be, but I understand what you're saying. Because it is a very oddly constructed team. And if you kind of go back to that 2018-19 team and you look at who was on it, and that team was loaded. Like, yeah. there was a 59-win team, and you had really players that either were or very quickly soon became very, very good NBA players. Going from all NBA players at the top to, you know, I think Norm Powell was the 11th man on that team, and he is a pretty good NBA player. So, I just don't see that with this group. And so, you know, I'm kind of like, I think it's fine to kind of tread the middle, be competitive, you know, get in a situation you might get lucky in a playoff type scenario and kind of go from there. I get what you're saying. I just don't have as much faith as you do in kind of building, going all in around Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam right now.
So this is the case though, is you're right. And I don't mind it either. I actually think that the Raptors are in a pretty good spot where they can afford to be patient, accumulate assets, and know that if something does come along, that they're going to have really incredible pieces, and they're probably going to have the front office to pull that trade off effectively. But when you say what's the, like, they're not the championship tending core, they're not the team, you know what's very different too, though, is the NBA landscape. Like, LeBron James might not be relevant in the playoffs. Like, that's a real thing. All of a sudden, the Warriors, who look like they might be bouncing back to Warrior form, have real questions as well this year. Look at Brooklyn. We thought Brooklyn was going to be a juggernaut. There's drama with Kyrie. James Harden's not the same guy. Kevin Durant is hurt again. The Bucks, you want to talk about a team that doesn't have depth right now. The Bucks' depth is horrific. Like, they're at a point where if they lose Bobby Portis Jr., they're screwed. You can't have that and be a title contender. You got to lean on Giannis. We're looking at the 76ers right now. It's Embiid and a bunch of bums. It's a 27-year-old guy that has a history of leg injuries. Like, to me, the case of trying to get a little aggressive with this is, how often do you remember in your lifetime the NBA being truly this wide open, where a 36-year-old or whatever Chris Paul-led Suns is the leading contender right now? Like, it's a, it is not a daunting landscape out there.
No, that's a fair observation. I mean, I think this is, you know, if you go back to, you know, the NBA lockout in 2012-13 or 11-12, whenever it was, I mean, this was sort of what they were working towards when you started putting on really aggressive payroll taxes and repeater taxes and all these kinds of things. They were trying to make it difficult for true dynasties to form. The one that did form was Golden State, and it was a fluke because of the TV rights, you know, that allowed them to get Kevin Durant, the big bump in the TV money. And so now we're kind of, it's all working through the system, and your point is correct. Like, it's really hard for teams to fix themselves with, you know, big money moves. So I think, you know, again, there's two ways to look at that. You can go, okay, it's a little bit more flat landscape. So, you know, maybe we can do it by ensemble, and you look at Phoenix, and that's the approach they've taken, and it seems to be working really well. Or you can kind of take what you have and like you say, be aggressive. I just think in the scenario they have, the player you're trying to be aggressive for, if it, for example, it is Bradley Beal, well, he's not exactly moving the needle on a pretty deep team relatively in Washington. And so you're kind of hoping that by adding him to a not-so-deep team here in Toronto, although maybe with a little bit more high-end talent, you know, all of a sudden you're, you know, you've really changed the trajectory of your team. And keep in mind, in doing that, you're swinging once, right? Like, you're probably attaching four or five multiple, you know, pick swaps and all those kinds of things. So I just don't know if that's where they're at yet. And I think if you're really thinking big picture, you add to this group, you are a little bit better this year, maybe a fair bit better. You're definitely better going into training camp this next year. And at that point, you know, if it's not going to play out in terms of a championship-type scenario, maybe you're the team that's rebuilding, right? And all of a sudden, you're a 29- and 30-year-old, you know, two- or three-time All-Stars are the players that are in the market, and you can pivot at that point. So I just don't know if this is – I don't know if the return on that is the time to kind of mortgage a franchise. I guess that's maybe what I react to most.
There's also an element of, you know, keep your powder dry for it, you know, if Beal's not your guy, someone comes available pretty much every offseason that we don't expect coming. My concern with that would be then if you know you need to make a move like that at some point and you think that that's likelier in the offseason, you still need to act now to turn Dragic into something that is an asset for that scenario.
Yes, correct.
In the summer, because Dragic's contract is off the books after this year. You don't have So this is why I'm feeling the urgency, Brain, to make a trade, is that Dragic salary ballast is basically, if you don't want to touch the core, which you've reported that at least for right now they don't, the Dragic contract plus assets is your only means of adding beyond like the mid-level exception in the near future. So I'd be on board with, you know, if Bobby and Masai sit down and they're like, look, we want to take a swing this summer, not right now, I'd still be willing to attach a pick to Dragic to turn it into something that could still be an asset and a helpful salary matching tool in the summer. Now, obviously, if they help your team now and help your team next year, even better. Like, if that's an Eric Gordon or Bogdan Bogdanovic or someone of that ilk, awesome. If it's just an asset rollover too, though, like, this front office has shown a willingness to kind of roll over flexibility year to year. I want to ask about one other thing you mentioned. You said, hey, if they don't do that move and they don't see the all-in window, what if they're sellers? Is the sense you get that that's off the table for this year? I know you said they won't touch the core, but would you be surprised if they withdraw from this group, at least the six or seven guys that are playing right now?
Boucher, basically, is the question.
Yeah, Boucher is the question. Yeah,
I think if there was the right opportunity, they would include Boucher in a deal. I don't think they're that wedded to him, but. You know, I do think the fact is he is a free agent. It's a very thin free agent class. I don't think they want to get in a situation where They don't throw into a deal, and then all of a sudden someone throws in crazy money and they lose it for nothing. I don't think they, you know, so I think they probably want some, they've done some math on that or some calculations. But, you know, the interesting thing in all of this would be, I mean, there's just a lot of variables, right? And you know, I wouldn't be completely shocked if they, you know, they kept things status quo and wanted to keep any picks that they might attach to Dragic just in case something really does blow up somewhere, right? And maybe Giannis finally says, you know what, I can't do it in Milwaukee anymore, and you want to at least, you know, position yourself somehow for that. But, you know, again, that's like pure speculation. But I think
there's a reason Alex Antetokounmpo is still on the 905 roster, even though he barely plays, and they've had to juggle that roster a bunch.
Yeah, the I mean, I think the interesting thing is the reaction. What the reaction will be is if the trade deadline comes and goes, and they end up buying out Dragic and nothing happens. Like,
can't have that.
You know, it's going to be a tough sell. Like, I'll be really interested in an honest explanation of that. You know, the optics around Dragic have certainly not been great. I don't think he's done him any favors with his, you know, his Instagram feed or whatever it's been. You know, I've had multiple people tell me that, you know, there was a very, you know, one of those family situations that you just can't paper over, you got to deal with. And then as recently as the other day, somebody saying, well, no, he basically, they went young, they didn't want him around, and, you know, he really wants to play somewhere. So, you know, I think if they can turn that contract into something, then all of a sudden the decision they made on Kyle in the summer to sign and trade him versus, you know, just let him walk in free agency and use the cap space will, you know, we'll have a better picture of was that the right call or not. But I think if the return for Kyle Lowry is Precious Achiuwa, you know, it's, I don't know. It's not, I don't think it's a fantastic look.
Yeah, no, that is correct. Especially when you pair it with this, which is, again, another reason for my what is the timeline question or what are you doing here moving forward. It's one thing if Gary Trent Jr., like, I really, this isn't meaning to shift this into the Raptors or in a negative spot right now, but it's one thing right now if Gary Trent Jr. is doing this and he's on a five-year deal and you're going, wow, they really did this incredible maneuver grabbing Gary Trent for Norm Powell's expiring contract and then signing him to a long-term contract. Is how old is he? 23 years old? He's young, right? He's one of those sneaky, he's the opposite of DeLon Wright, where he's been around forever, but he's young. So you turn Gary Trent Jr. into a long-term contract and you're saying that's a coup. What an offseason, what a deadline. It actually does paper over a little bit of the fact that maybe you didn't get a good return for your franchise greatest player. But Gary Trent's only on a two-year contract. He's not opting into that third year. That player option is there for, I don't know, emergencies only for Gary Trent. Like, is he already opted out of that, Blake? Like, he's already sent the word down.
Injury only.
He was
basically
The worst case scenario. Gary Trent is here for 3 years now on that deal. Essentially, going into next year, he's a pending free agent, which is nuts considering the way that this worked out. So, what I wanted to ask you just about Trent is, okay, so he's either going to get the bag and get a long contract based on if he's playing this way. Great, I guess that's no problem if he is this guy, but what happened with that contract by your estimation or from what you understand? Because it makes no sense to me other than this. Gary Trent Jr. didn't want to be a Toronto Raptor. He didn't want to play in Toronto. He hated the pandemic restrictions here or something along those lines, being in a foreign country during a pandemic. Who knows? And so the only thing that he was willing to sign with this team was very short term.
I think that's a reasonable... I can't say exactly what it is, but it was interesting listening to Fred VanVleet the other night talk about how, you know, a situation when Gary Trent arrived in Tampa last year, and he kind of, you know, he said, you know, he was kind of closed off. He thought he looked at it as a bit of a rental. You know, and this year there's been a kind of a real blossoming in terms of the relationship, and he's really opened up and he's kind of become more of the whole program. So I think if you put those, you know, that together and you go, he's going in the off season, he's never been to Toronto or he's never played in Toronto. He doesn't really know the organization that well. Clearly a pretty confident guy. And so, yeah, so you go, so that's probably why he wanted the player option. Why the Raptors gave him the player option, you know, I don't know. It doesn't, you know, maybe they had no choice. But, it does put them in a bit of a bind. And that's why, to go back to the conversation off the top, in terms of pressure or urgency or whatever, Gary Trent Jr. is a pending free agent next summer. Next season. But like, if we're at the trade deadline this time next year, right? Gary Trent is expiring. Pascal Siakam would have 1 year left on his deal. Fred VanVleet, depending on what happens in terms of an extension, if he doesn't get an extension, he would be, I believe, on an expiring. OG Anunoby would have, I think, one more year on his deal. In other words, all these players you're looking at as your core are all, you know, all of a sudden the power dynamic shifts or the urgency, then we would be looking at, you know, I think pressure would be a more apt adjective because, you know, as much as these players are all, you look at as part of your core, it's not like they're in your system guaranteed for the next 3-4 years. And so I think that's why, you know, there is probably, a need to get a little bit done at the trade deadline. And to your point, JD, I think there is, you know, the future is a little more uncertain than I think most people would assume.
What we've come to the conclusion of here, as we let you go, is that Blake's column needs to be called All Your Trades Are Good in reference to my trades of, you know, blowing up the core immediately. Michael Grange, this was great, buddy. Always love getting a chat.
Okay, thanks, guys.
See you, pal. Michael Grange. That insider, I was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus. You know Don Valley North Lexus. It's where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. I think this Raptors team is extremely fascinating. I thought that the Grange outline there, Blake, of, hey, and it's going to be the one that they do, and it probably does make the most sense of, hey, you said, what do you use? Keep your powder dry, keep waiting, do those things, be smart, be diligent. I don't expect a big move come deadline, but the offseason is all of a sudden going to be fascinating for those reasons, is that it's one thing to quote-unquote keep the powder dry when you have long-term assets, but Gary Trent Jr. and OG Anunoby are all of a sudden not super long-term assets. And that's why I really do think that this offseason, there are going to be questions of, are you moving either of those guys? Are you moving both of those guys? Does a player become available where you're shifting the, what is the word, urgency of the franchise? It's like, that's there. This is now on the table a year after picking Scotty Barnes fourth overall.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm the cap sheet guy, right? I know... Yep. There are columns there where those contracts expire or those options come up. So I'm with you. I just think I think anytime you're talking about a foundational piece, unless it's a no-brainer trade, it's an off-season discussion more than a trade deadline discussion.
Absolutely.
And this is why I thought, you know, one thing to pull out of that I said, just to refresh it here, is turning the Dragic salary matching asset into something else that extends into the summer.
Whether
that's a useful player or an awesome player or just the, you know, a neutral value contract, if that's something that is helpful in a trade or helpful for your roster for next year, like, this is where I'm at. Is this yep. next week is the start of your 2022 offseason, yep. in addition to being a trade deadline on its own for a team that has maybe some upward mobility in an Eastern Conference. And we'll get another look at that tonight with the Chicago Bulls, who we're going to talk about after the break. But
yes, that's correct. No, but that's correct, Blake. Honestly, man, that's such a great point. I'm so glad that you frame it that way, because I do think that we had this thought of Dragic of, well, maybe he gets bought out and maybe this is what earlier in the year now. That's no longer the case. And that's
I'd
why,
be disappointed now. This team's closer than buy
exactly,
the guy out.
Exactly. Exactly. They're closer than buying the guy out. And Grange said that they'll point to the success and they'll point to the banner and they'll say that this is what they... And that's right too, right? This is a two things can be true situation. However, after a trade deadline where you did not move your franchise player in Kyle Lowry and then ended up trading him for Precious Achiuwa, like, that puts both deadlines into perspective now differently, right? You don't get anything for Goran Dragic. We're looking back at the Lowry non-trade differently. And then we're saying, well, how could you blow this opportunity right now to add something? And so, I'm sorry, I do think that we got to find a word between pressure and urgency, because maybe it's not as drastic as pressure, but it feels a little bit more than urgency. It's something in the middle here.
Urgency.
Oh, yes, fragency. No. I like it.
Let's think about that. Yeah, let's think about that during the break. Let's take five. Let's come back. We're going to talk about that Raptors-Bulls game tonight as we tee up the Wake and Rake because we're out of NHL games. It's the All-Star break there. It's probably going to be basketball heavy unless you guys have some curling and golf and Olympic picks.
I might have some hockey stuff in there.
Oh,
a little Olympic hockey women's in hockey. There.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I stayed
your Olympic hockey insider, Ailish Forfar.
Sure. Those will be ones that you wake up to check if the parlay hit.
Correct.
Not doing the 1 a.m. Watching the bets roll in. Let's take a break. Wake and Rake when we come back. The Fan Morning Show, Sports F590, The Fan.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar. Back-to-back, Wake and Rake domination. Don't call it a dynasty. The Beatles of sports betting, gambling, whatever. Same stuff.
That's right.
We absolutely crushed it last night. We crushed it. It was never in doubt that the Bettles.
Yeah, that's good. That's Blake. That's
Blake in the chat. The Bettles.
It looks better in text than it looks.
It looks better when you say it out loud.
It looks better in text than it sounds out loud. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did we hit last night? So I had Canada -5.5, and they won 12-1. So that was probably
no sweat there. I had Grizzlies -3.5, which they had a big double-digit lead on the Knicks, and the Knicks kept getting it back to like 5 points. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Are you guys gonna do the Blazers thing to me from the other night?" But they cruised.
Well, John missed a million shots. He missed every three imaginable. So that's why it was a bit of a sweat. What about the bad Beatles if we lose?
Yeah, that's
the
a good
bad
one.
Beatles.
That's good. Yeah. That's good.
The biggest sweat last night was JD. You had Kevin Porter Jr. over 15.5 points. It really didn't look like he was going to get there. He took more of a playmaker role in that game. Mm-hmm. At one point, it was the fourth quarter. You only had 6 field goal attempts. You were playing the revenge against your old team card, and he did a very non-Kevin Porter Jr. thing and just, like, played a good team point guard game.
Yeah, he did.
Which, maybe that's what he wanted to show the Cavs. No, he shouldn't have doubted my ability to grow. And then in pseudo-garbage time, up by, like, 10 points in the final minutes, he clears the over-under 15.5. So we hit the wake.
Listen, Blake, nobody asked how. They asked how many. And
look,
how many is now 9 of my last 10 bets have hit. Mm-hmm. 9 of my last 10 best bets. Blake just said it in our break. Our spreadsheet has so much green right now. It's coming off the page, all right? It's everywhere. And I will say it again. If you listen to the show and you don't bet our picks or you don't reach out and you don't ask for promo codes to me, you don't follow on Instagram, you don't subscribe to this podcast, you're not listening to 8:30, you're like, oh, I forgot to listen today. I didn't do the thing. There's nothing more important. It's free money. It's been free money for you. Oh, you don't want to feed your family? Oh, okay. Wow, that's real nice. You don't want to be a provider? Okay, that's real nice. Oh, you've got so much money that you don't care about other money? Okay, that's nice. You should be donating more to charity. Donate to the show. Send us, Venmo us some money because you obviously have too much to give. So I should see the DMs popping off every single day. Every single day. Also, I had some people in the DMs last night during Kevin Porter's slow start. And I want to say this is another tenet of gambling. Nobody needs that person. No one needs the bad energy.
No, we're watching. Early. We know.
No, but nobody needs the bad early energy vibes because it's only going to make you look stupid if we lose or make me mad if we lose. It's a lose-lose situation. So no more of that. Let's dive into the Raptors game tonight, though. Raptors, they are 3.5-point favorites against the so-called top team in the Eastern Conference. But no, tell JD that they shouldn't be aggressive heading into the playoffs. The Bulls' value here seems like a bit of the play at +130, considering it's DeMar. LaVine is probable. Mm. They're missing a bunch of guys, but they've been missing those guys for a while. I still think that from a spread standpoint, this is a no play for me. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm more player props tonight with this, especially considering that Gary Trent can beat DeMar's record of consecutive 30-point games against DeMar tonight. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a perfect little recipe for that happening for me. So I'm all over it. That's it's a bet, but it's not my wake and rake, but I just like to put that into the universe.
You know Gary Trent's hot because his point total over under has gone up a point each of the last couple games. It's now at 18.5, and you're only getting -145 on that. So that thing might be bumping to 19.5 shortly. It's
you can
hot.
Get five, over 28.5 for Gary Trent for +350.
Ooh. So on you're going the full milestone bet.
Full
there.
Milestone. Over 28.5. +350, he's going to do it. Just $5.
I actually don't mind that. I actually don't mind that at all. I will say
it's
this.
It's already been placed while we're on the air. Currently, boom, yeah, bet it.
I was going to say that for all of us in this segment, I was going to bring up Gary Trent Jr. I'm glad you did, Blake, because his numbers have been stupid low. And even at 18.5, last game, Gary Trent Jr. was at 17 points at halftime. He's just... This is to go back to my Kevin Porter Jr. bet that it didn't play out the way that I thought it was going to with the immense amount of volume. Blake, you're right. He ended up playing a smart game. Gary Trent Jr. is going to give you volume right now. He's taking a ton of shots. He's getting a ton of minutes. Look at the amount of attempts he's taking and look at where he's taking them from. There's a lot of threes that he shoots every single game. Now he's adding the dynamic of getting to the line a little bit more because he's playing so hot that defenses are loading up on him and playing him a bit more aggressively. I just think that Gary Trent Jr. over 18.5, I'm doing what Ailish is doing. I'm teasing Gary Trent Jr. in a bet builder on Coolbet to over 21.5 points because I don't know why or what the case is right now for him to slow down. My philosophical belief when it comes to sports betting is that you ride streaks, that you do not start to fade streaks. And when the sports gambling gods, when Gambler shines bright upon you, you don't look, what's that, kick a gift horse in the face, look a gift horse
don't look
in the
a
face.
Gift horse in the mouth.
You don't look it
what?
In the mouth. That's right.
I've never heard that one either, guys. Sorry.
Ailish, have you ever heard the term
kick
Trojan
a gift
horse
in the face?
Yes, yeah. I know the Trojan horse.
It's related
horse
to that. It's like, okay, a Trojan horse, a gift horse sneaks in, but what kind of person looks at a gift like that to check, oh, maybe this gift is a...
Okay, I get it.
So that's where
they should have. But so I'm playing Gary Trent Jr. over in points again tonight. I'm teasing it up to 21.5, and I'm going in that direction. I'm putting in a bet builder.
So Gary Trent Jr. during this 5-game scoring streak, not only has it helped the Raptors' offense a lot, their offensive rating in those games with him on the court is up to 114. He has a 27% usage rate. That is tops on the team by a long shot. That's almost 2019-2020 Siakam levels of usage. That's how much they've been relying on him. And yes, he's getting free throws now on jump shots because teams are selling out on him. And I think the most interesting thing about Gary Trent being hot is that there's not really a defensive solution for it because it is a lot of jump shots. And given the way the Raptors are built and who the Bulls start, I'm not sure what the answer is because they start Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan, who both try and have some size, and you can do team side stuff around them. But Nikola Vucevic is more of a, you know, he plays better in a more conservative defense. AO and Javonte Green are good wing defenders, but you have to account for Pascal Siakam and Scottie Barnes and OG Anunoby, and, you know, maybe you don't want DeMar DeRozan on Fred VanVleet either. So they have some tough decisions here defensively, and I think it's tough decisions in a way that one of DeMar, Zach LaVine, is going to be on Gary Trent Jr. And we saw what happened. We saw what happens with that. He had 32 in 37 minutes against the Bulls last time out, and I think it was his most efficient of this streak. Now, the Bulls won that game, which is why even despite laying out the defensive matchup like that, you could lean Bulls money line or Bulls +3.5 on a value play here. The Bulls did just beat them by 6. No Ball and Caruso, and no DJJ, but everyone else is kind of around. So, yeah, I don't know what the solution is. And this isn't unique to the Bulls. I just don't think, even if Gary Trent's hot, it's the old Norm Powell thing. Like, you're just not pulling your best defenders off of Fred and Pascal, I don't think, because that opens up a bigger hole somewhere else than, hey, Gary's going to shoot over a bad defender.
So I would also like to say this. Just, it's DeMar DeRozan. I feel like we can combine these, the double A-list thing for a little bet builder here. On Cool Bet right now, you can make a bet builder of DeMar DeRozan over 23.5 points. Or sorry, over 23.5 points, so 24 more, with Gary Trent Jr. At over 21.5 points for plus 260. That seems like pretty good value for those two guys to both just be over 24 points.
It does. I mean, DeMar's not gonna be taking it easy, right? This is no. Even without a crowd, DeMar's gonna be fired up for this one. It's just for Masai and Drake sitting in the seats alone. DeMar had 29 last time out against the Raptors, and that was with the Raptors throwing a ton of defensive attention. Like, he got, you know how hard it is to get OG in really, really bad foul trouble early in a game? Yep. And DeMar did it. OG had three fouls instantly. And OG came up. He learned to play defense guarding DeMar DeRozan in practice every day. DeMar's also like on a heater of his own. He shot 50% or better in seven straight games. And only once in that stretch has he gone under 29 points. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, okay. Go ahead, JD. Sorry.
I was just going to say that, are we allowed? So I guess all of us, it's like a consensus pick again of we're all playing the Gary Trent Jr. over, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to tease it to get a little bit better value because 18.5 at minus 145. Like, I'm going to bet build it.
Yeah, we're
I'm
all not gonna... teasing it more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because so at minus 145, you may as well push it a little higher.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so do we exclude it or do we include it in the Wake and Rake?
I think we can only include it if we're playing the 18.5 straight up, because we can't really if one of you, I don't want to use it. I don't at minus 145, I'd rather do something bigger around it. I'm not going to put it on mine. If one of you guys wants to, I will give the vote of support.
Ailish, what is your Wake and Rake pick for this evening?
Okay. My Wake and Rake pick. And, it's off the book, like off the board. A bit. It's Russia women's hockey over Switzerland minus 1.5. I have played against that Russian team. They are going to absolutely destroy Switzerland. Okay. Switzerland, we just saw, lost 12-1 to Canada. There's no way that game is closer than a 4 or 5 goal game for Russia. So they're playing tonight. I know it sucks to be the late leg of the Wake and Rake, but when you wake up in the morning, you should feel good about that bet. So yeah, they're minus 1.5 over Switzerland, and it is, I think it's plus money too. I have it at plus 150.
Wrong.
Yeah, hurry up and bet it. Go, 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 go.
Yeah, I don't know.
Plus money.
I love it. I'm already
put
on it.
This
is actually one of those times where Ailish gives you a pick that you're supposed to bet right away, mm-hmm. that you're actually supposed to rush to instead of her, mm-hmm. where she says, hey, here's the thing. So you have Russia at plus money?
I have Russia at plus money, plus 150 on the spread,
the
minus 1.5 on the puck line. That's what they call it.
Oh, on the puck
hockey,
line.
Eh?
Okay. See, I have line, it at sorry. Minus 205 as plus 205. So I'll probably be betting that one. You can get, I'm going to go even bigger with this. So I've been doing a lot of plus money bets lately. So I'm going to be a little more conservative today with my pick. The Heat have lost 3 straight games, and I just don't think that they're going to lose to the Spurs tonight. They need this win all of a sudden. They've been slipping in the standings. The team has not been performing very well. I think that this is a good matchup for them. So I'm just going to take the Heat money line. I have it at minus 180 right now. So this is a barely qualifier, but I'm going to take that pick tonight because I want us to keep this Wake and Rake rolling, and I want to have a streak. So let's go Miami Heat minus 180 to win. Not on the spread, just to win.
Jimmy, Kyle, and PJ all questionable. So could be a Kyle Lowry return. Doug McDermott and Deontay Murray are questionable for the Spurs side. It's on the road, but really it's San Antonio. It's not like it's a hard place to play. By the way, the one possible concern with the Russia women's team, they've only had one practice since their whole team was in isolation.
No problem.
They were missing 5 players for that one practice.
No doubt about it.
That team is potentially having some of their taxi squad in that game. That's
great.
All. I just
their
wanted
taxi
to provide
squad
the
is better than anyone on Switzerland.
I just wanted
Actually,
to provide
there's
the
one really good girl on
anyone.
Switzerland.
Yeah, I'm glad anyone was wondering why the line is the way it is, that would be why.
Blake, hockey insider.
Yeah. No, Blake has a alarm go up when a line looks too good to be true. There's got to be something going on. A line that I like tonight, I wouldn't say it's too good to be true, but it's good enough to add to the Wake and Rake. Think of the Phoenix Suns, -5.5.
Oh, yeah.
That at the Atlanta Hawks. Pick. Battle between like the two hottest teams in basketball. The Raptors just ended the Hawks' winning streak without Trae Young. Trae Young is questionable for this one. Phoenix, in addition to being the hottest team in basketball, also expecting DeAndre Ayton and Jay Crowder back tonight. So the hottest team in basketball getting two rotation pieces back to add to that hot streak. 5.5 is not a huge line. Atlanta's good. And again, if Trae's there, they've been playing really well. Onyeka's opened something up for them defensively. The Suns have been the best team in basketball for like a month and a half now.
Okay, so can you run through them one more time? I got my Russia one.
So we have Suns -5.5, the Russia women's hockey team -1.5, and the Miami Heat on the money line.
Nice. I like it,
That's
guys.
Wake and Rake.
I really like it.
It's a lot of green.
You know what people are not liking in the text line? Everybody is saying that your explanation of what a gift horse in the mouth is incorrect. Oh. We have about 4 or 5 texts about that. So we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it during the break, and we'll give you
Blake
some education.
Blake doesn't know about nickels or gift horses.
Oh, it's about trying to look at the age of a horse.
Yes, it's about the age. Everybody's mad at you. Jason in Newmarket, Murray in Toronto, Meredith in EG, all on the text line.
Jordan and Saga in there? Because I got some heat for Jordan and Saga another time.
Jordan and Saga has been quiet today.
No, he's shook today after I threw the warning out there.
Yeah, you did throw the warning.
I don't know. I think my explanation for gift horse in the mouth makes just as much sense as, hey, you could tell how old they are from their teeth. But, all right, mea culpa. My bad. That's your Wakey Rake for today.